Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 3:04 p.m. and that is Central Time. Today is March 16th. And when we think about what's been happening in markets today, well, there's two big events. The first is obviously the Federal Reserve meeting, and they've raised rates by a quarter of a point. They're signaling that they're going to raise rates by a quarter of a point at every meeting between now and the end of the year, and they anticipate getting up to about 1.9%, which would fall in line with the market expectation that they're going to raise rates by 7 times this year. So I've been quite clear, I think that's rather ambitious. I think it's much more likely that we're going to get one and done, and maybe just a stretch on that and say two and done. But when we think about what it is that is animating the Federal Reserve, they want to try and look like at least they are combating inflation. And they have been forced into this position because they said that inflation would be transitory, and it has, in fact, proved to be a bit more persistent than they had been anticipating. So now they're being forced into a position where they have to be seen to be trying to do something about it. But there is also the potential that we are coming towards the peak of inflation, and that inflationary pressures will already start to moderate. And that would be particularly true if peace were to break out in Ukraine. And it does appear, at least, that the opposing parties are coming closer to what Ukraine's future might look like after this war. But obviously, Russia wants to be able to negotiate from a position of strength, and Ukraine wants to be able to negotiate from a position of intransigent resilience. So obviously, there is a lot to there's still a lot of details to be ironed out here. I think it's probably worth reminding ourselves. I think it's one of the sayings from the Game of Thrones that you make peace with your enemies. So that's always the case. It's a truism, but it's probably worth remembering. But I thought that it was interesting today that we've seen an aggressive sell-off in the 30-year Treasury future. And it came right back down to test the lows in February, and then it rallied off its lows in here today. And we're really quite oversold in the short term. So I think it's not really ambitious to anticipate that we might be in for at least a reversionary rally. And part of the reason for that is we're in the region of a previous area of support, and somewhat oversold in the short term, so it's really not ambitious to anticipate that we should get a rebound here. And gold prices were also off their lows in here today, reversing an earlier decline to finish back above $1,900. And of course, this is the upper side of the underlying trading range, so it's a pivotal area where we might anticipate some support coming back in. So then we can think about high yield bonds, and they've been selling off rather aggressively, and they were also in positive territory in here today, and still also have a really quite deep short term oversold condition. When we think about liquidity and the liquidity fueled market, then the Federal Reserve is beginning to withdraw the punch bowl. They will have ended their quantitative easing program now. They anticipated that it would be over before they raised interest rates. So those two themes dovetail. Not only have they stopped adding new money into the system, but they're now raising the cost of it as well. But then we have China. And China is faced with this really quite acute acceleration lower in the Hang Seng. And the China Enterprises Index, where we have a large number of what had previously been described as champion companies, and it has really been selling off in an exceptionally aggressive manner. And we started to see a rebound coming through in here today. So that's, I think, a rather important phenomenon. So when we then think about what we can anticipate next, well, we've got a very short-term oversold condition, and China is rather keen to avoid volatility. So what we are looking at now is an environment where there is the potential for a rebound, there is the potential for China to introduce stimulative measures, and also we can think about the impact not only on the technology sector, but the fact that new home prices in China have been falling. Now, they're not falling by 10%, they're falling by a couple of percent, in many cases, not even 1%, but they're not going up. And the CSI 300 real estate index is now steadying from the lower side of its range. So they've been saying for most of the last 6 months that they're going to support the property sector, but they haven't really been seen to be doing anything about it. They've been saying that they were going to try and support the wider economy, but they haven't been seen to be doing anything about it either. So then we saw a really acute sell-off. And that was particularly true in the high yield sector. When we then just look at how much the high yield bond index has pulled back, we're back at levels now that haven't been seen since all the way back at the lows in 2011. So this has been an incredibly swift decline, considering that it only peaked about 7 or 8 months ago. And now we are at a fraction of where prices had been in just immediately after the pandemic. So this acceleration lower has begun to gain the attention of government officials in China. So that's a potential source of liquidity that they're going to be forced to come in and support the economy. And then you have the added wrinkle that the number of COVID cases is ramping higher in China. And there are a couple of different aspects to this. The first is that the Omicron variant is much more transmissible than any of the previous variants. And we've seen lots of examples of that around the world. And now we have the Deltacron variant, which is at least as virulent as the original Omicron variant. And then we have the ineffectiveness of Chinese vaccines against anything but the original variant. And then there's the additional point that comparatively small numbers of the most vulnerable portion of society, which are the over 80-year-olds, have been vaccinated in either Hong Kong or mainland China. And that's a nasty triumvirate. So China's locking down various parts of the country on an as-needed basis, and that's impacting the supply chain. But the other point, of course, is that we could see deaths rocketing higher in China because of this acute vulnerability. When we think about the lack of vaccination and the ineffectiveness of the domestic vaccines, and I don't believe that that's priced in. So that could contribute to a really significant recession. And on top of that, it could have a really quite deleterious impact on property prices. And not least because I've regarded the coronavirus as a euthanasia virus for a couple of years now, because the greatest risk is to older people. And when we think about China and the one-child policy, well, they have a large number of elderly people. So this is obviously a significant threat, which I don't really think has been priced in yet, because China had been so successful using draconian measures, which is, and obviously that comes with both benefits and negatives. But the reality is they were successful in containing the coronavirus, and now it seems to be overtaking them. And the acceleration in number of cases in Hong Kong is quicker than than just about anywhere else in the world. And that could easily be replicated on the mainland, because once the Omicron variant takes hold, well, then it is going to run through a population in very short order. So we're obviously looking at some difficulties in China, and it will necessitate a great deal of assistance. China was able to avoid the kind of monetary and fiscal assistance that all the developed countries had to engage in during 2020 and 2021 because they were able to contain the virus. And then they had the benefit of having a big boom in orders from the rest of the world, which helped the balance of payments. And instead, they used that boom in exports to engage in a lot of social and economic engineering. Whereas now it might appear to be, or at least I think it's a significant risk that China is going to have to deal with the pandemic on this occasion, and it's going to happen in an election year for them, and obviously that represents significant uncertainty. They may have to engage in the same kind of liquidity provision that everyone else had to, and that would represent a flood of new money coming into the system. So the Golden Dragon ETF is down over 70% from the peak last year, and it then rebounded really impressively in here today. And if it follows through on the upside tomorrow, this will be an upside weekly key reversal. And the low in here this week corresponds with the initial breakout point back in 2013. So there has been an incredible decline over the course of the last 15 months, and it may now be ending. So there's the potential here that we could get a reversionary rally, at least back up towards the 200-day moving average. And then there is probably going to be a period of consolidation subsequently. But of course, it will be very much dependent on just how much money does China print. And the renminbi was stronger in here today. But I think unlikely that we're going to see the renminbi strengthen any further if they have to deal with a significant ramping up of pandemic precautionary measures. Then we can flick that around and think about the US dollar. The dollar was in negative territory in here today. So a lot of the pricing in of interest rate differentials has already occurred. And with bond yields beginning to contract and prices beginning to rise, I think that we're more likely to see some risk-off type activity. But it's going to be in various sectors where we're going to see some back and forth in terms of prices. So the S&P 500 was in positive territory today. It has held the low from late February. There's still a sequence of lower rally highs, so it's going to have to at least sustain a move up and through 4,400 in order to confirm that this is a low of more than short-term significance. And the Nasdaq was also in positive territory in here today. And it's also held the low from late February as well. It's, I think, interesting to look at this dynamic between both the renminbi and the dollar, whereas when we look at the euro, it's extremely oversold and it's beginning to demonstrate some support. And we're back in the region of lows last seen during the pandemic in early 2020. And Europe trades at a lower valuation to the USA, and it's sold off aggressively because of the proximity to Ukraine. But the Euro Stoxx 50, for example, has rebounded really emphatically from the region of the 1,000-day moving average and then followed through on the upside in here this week. And when we just broaden that out and look at the Europe Stoxx 600, well, this looks like the first step above the base. And we're bouncing from the upper side of what's effectively a 21-year base formation. So we might see some back and forth trading, and we might see some ranging around here, but it looks increasingly likely that this breakout is going to hold. And then we can think about Japan as well, where the TOPIX has also pulled back in an aggressive manner over the course of the last 6 months, and is also firming from the region of the 1,000-day moving average. And this is the upper side of another exceptionally long base formation. So there's the real potential here that what we should start to anticipate is that Europe and Japan, and arguably the FTSE 100, has got a very similar pattern overall to the Europe Stoxx 600, where it's been ranging now above that long-term base formation for years, and the mid-cap sector is also bouncing from the region of the 1,000-day moving average and following through on the upside in here this week in a rather impressive manner. I think it's quite likely that these markets are going to outperform Wall Street over the coming years. The threat of interest rate hikes, the threat also from the possibility of valuations contracting, and the inability of the tech sector to continue to maintain its dominance, those will all contribute to investors beginning to favor other markets. And the dollar looks to be overvalued. And I really think it is exceptionally unlikely that they're going to raise rates by 7 times this year. We are already at a yield curve spread where we only have about 23 basis points. So there's been a really quite aggressive compression of this measure over the course of the last 8 or 9 months. And then I think it's also worth considering that financial conditions have already been contracting. And this Chicago Fed National Financial Conditions Index I thought was quite interesting. It's now back at levels that we saw in 2015 and 16. And that was a time when we were coming out of QE2, and there was a lot of worry about what was happening next and whether the economy was capable of enduring higher interest rates. And now you have investors pricing in the potential that they're going to raise rates by up to 7 times this year, and I don't see a lot of discussion about whether they're in fact whether the market is in fact capable of tolerating it. But I think it's also worth reminding ourselves that this measure has been rising for 6 months already, and it bottomed in approximately June of last year at negative 74 basis points. It's up to about 35. So we've had at least 35 basis points of tightening already, and now they're starting to raise interest rates. So the market has already done a lot of the tightening before the Federal Reserve has even begun to really raise rates, and the pace of this tightening is going to accelerate. And that's going to inhibit the ability of the Fed to persist in this move. So we're in an environment where there's a lot of uncertainty about the ability of the Fed to do what it says it wants to do. Gold is beginning to steady, and bond prices are starting to steady. And all of that is contributing to this view that we're in an environment where they won't be able to do what they say they're going to do. And the stock market's being set up for disappointment. So the rescue for the stock market, the only way that we could square this knot, is to think that China is going to provide exceptionally large amounts of liquidity, which will then help to support asset prices overall. And that is perhaps why stock markets could sustain breakouts from these very short-term ranges that have formed over the last 2 weeks. So really, we have to pay attention to how much money is China going to print. And the worse the Omicron problem becomes, the greater the likelihood is that they will have to respond with outsized stimulus. And not least because Xi Jinping will want to ensure that he is reinstated and becomes president for life. And I think with that, I'll leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.